Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a 2022 edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm Big Waz, aka Wazzy Lambre, joined as always by my brother on the west side of Los Angeles, Nando Vila. Happy New Year to you and to all.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a while. I missed you. It's been a few weeks since we've done a show, but happy to be back in the chair. And excited for 2022.
Yeah, the holidays are over. We're done with the glazed hams and, you know, the mac and cheese and the carb loading. We're done with that. It's now back to business, back to basics. On today's show, Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos Infamy. I think she's about to go to the pokey. She's been convicted on 4 out of 11 counts of fraud for defrauding investors. Me and Nando are going to sort of give you a rundown about the ridiculousness of that and what it says about Silicon Valley and just the state of our culture in general. But first, man, you know, it's January 5th. We're on the eve of the 1 year anniversary of the craziest, most insanest thing that's ever happened in American politics, Nando. A bunch of kooks broke into the Capitol to take selfies with Confederate flags. A couple cops got killed, or one cop. A few protesters got killed. It was a fucked up day, but you know, the way the mainstream media is covering it, you would think this was the day that, you know, rock and roll died or something. It's kind of crazy. Nando, you know, look, usually on this show, I check the Post, I check the Times, I'll check some of my favorite bloggers and Substackers to see sort of pertinent things that we want to talk about. But in the mainstream elite political media, this is all they care about, period. Which I think is just kind of strange, because I think at the time, Nando, I don't want to say we were dismissive, but we were kind of just like,
we were dismissive.
Okay, we were dismissive. They kept calling it an insurrection and democracy is on the brink. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. It feels like you need the military on your side to actually execute a coup. Like, the military, the police apparatus, like, actually has to be on your side in order to defend your, you know, seizing of power. And they had none of that. They didn't even have Mitch McConnell's support, much less the generals and like the people who were in charge of the weaponry that would go into suppressing, you know, any actual insurrection. So like, I'd never understood the big panic about it. Obviously it was ugly and it was disgusting, and the people that participated in it should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But this has an existential crisis to American democracy. Felt kind of cheap and forced. What say you, Nando, 1 year later?
Yeah, I mean, there was a big debate around it at the time, and even in the run-up to it, as to whether America was on the brink of fascism. You know, at least is how we understand that term traditionally, meaning like, you know, basically a sort of authoritarian dictatorship with a totalitarian state that kind of seeks to dominate every aspect of life and quash out democracy and, you know, express violence towards, you know, minorities and things like that. And, you know, there's a question as to whether America already is just kind of like a, you know, sort of soft fascist state with, you know, you know, the cops that we have and like our empire abroad and things like that. But to call that event a meaningful threat to American democracy is just insane to me, because it was really just kind of a group of a few hundred weirdos who, you know, just kind of got in, incredibly predictable and avoidable. Like they knew about this ahead of time. There is, you know, it was like all organized on Facebook out in the open. And they were more or less kind of allowed to go in there where they, yeah, like you said, they took a few selfies, and like took a dump on Nancy Pelosi's chair. And like, yeah, that's, I mean, it's ugly and it's not a great look for America, but to say that that event in and of itself is some sort of threat to American democracy is crazy. And the real kind of effect of it has been, A, to just basically expand, you know, police power in DC, predictably, but also it's been the perfect thing for Democrats to kind of use. I mean, all year I've been kind of tuning it out, but you just see headlines all the time of like, new panel to, you know, investigate what the hell happened and hold people accountable. And of course, like, you know, that no one actually is going to held accountable, that a few of those people are going to go to jail and whatever, that's fine. But the people like kind of quote unquote actually responsible for it, i.e. Trump himself, right? Like if there was any meaningful accountability, the person who is at the top should be the person held accountable. Like these yahoos who did this, like, are completely irrelevant and easy to throw to the wolves. There is going to be no accountability for any politician or any actual leader with actual power who participated in it. So therefore, it's not interesting or important or even like worth paying attention to at all.
Yeah, and I mentioned it last night on my Twitch stream with TYT. Shouts to TYT Twitch Network. Check out Wozni every Tuesday. Here's the thing, too. When we talk about democracy dying and being dead, I just watched Build Back Better get smashed with a 70% voter approval rating at the behest of the corporate interests. If that's not anti-democratic, if that's not the death of democracy, I don't know what is. The will of the people has not been exercised in our government because it ran up against the will of the corporate interests and corporate power who have wholly captured our political class. It's just obvious, right? And, you know, the idea that you could talk about the death of democracy without talking about how undemocratic our political system already is and the needs that our systems already serve, meaning the needs of the corporate class. And again, you know, Joe Biden asked for this exorbitant military budget. Congress comes back with $25 billion extra. Okay, there's no 6 months of debate and hand-wringing and hankering and, oh, is Halliburton, are their books in order? Do we need to audit them to make sure there's not a bunch of waste and we're not putting the taxpayers' dollars? And there's none of it. Raytheon, none of it. We don't even question the blank checks we write to these.
Fully bipartisan.
And it's fully bipartisan. Again, so the idea that democracy is dead, hell yeah, it's dead. Of course it's dead, but it has nothing to do with January 6th is the way our government functions, where like it's public information that Joe Manchin is fucking getting, you know, he's getting donations from, I think it was like something like 17 different corporations in the weeks leading up to and after he basically came out and said, I'm going to vote against Build Back. Like this is public info. Like this is just straight up quid pro quo, like straight up and down. And this is public info. This is public legalized corruption. And then, you know, the idea that the media spends their whole day complaining about January 6th is it's amazing. Like, if you want to see anti-democracy, it's right. It's unfolding. It unfolded for you perfectly with Build Back Better, which, again, when they we do so much dick sucking about bipartisanship within the mainstream media, right? Whether it be cable news or the Times, the Post, Politico, you name it, all of those outlets, Wall Street Journal, you name it. We do so much like praising of bipartisanship, but a bill that has 70% approval rating amongst the American people, which we can't get 70% of people to agree on anything. Yeah. Nothing in this country. So the idea that that's not seen as something bipartisan and therefore great, and that, you know, all the hand wringing about anti-democracy is about, you know, these fucking yokels storming the building and stealing the laptop. It's all you need to know about these cats.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If you understand democracy as, broadly speaking, the will of the people being served, or, you know, the public at large being able to have some meaningful control over their lives, then America is one of the least democratic countries, certainly in the developed world. You know, that it's just we have no actual labor power. It's almost impossible to imagine democracy without actual labor power, without organized unions, which allow people to fight back and win concessions in the private sphere, meaning like, you know, private corporations, mm-hmm. which, you know, control your life increasingly more and more, because it's not even when you're on the job anymore. Now you're off the job, but you have your phone and they can still email you and bother you and you're expected to respond. You know, back in the day, you left the office and like, how are they going to find you? You know, they're going to call you at home. And so, yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head with Build Back Better, that like, you know, we could win, we can elect a Democratic president. We have a Democratic Congress and we have a Democratic Senate, and we can't even get 4 weeks paid leave for women who have babies, you know?
Right.
The bare minimum you could ever want. If anyone around you, like if anyone listening to has had kids recently or people around you have had kids, like, I don't know how we don't even have that. We don't have 4 weeks.
Again, this is the richest, most prosperous nation in the history of the world. And, you know, just because this podcast is dedicated to pot shots at Sleepy Joe Biden, I just remember him campaigning on his idea to unite the country, unite the Congress. I'm going to get Republicans to vote with me, which we knew was cap. It was ridiculous on its face at the time. This motherfucker can't get Democrats to vote with him, right? The likes of Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are telling him to go fuck himself. So that's all you need to know about Joe, Uncle Sleepy Joe, and his empty promises. And what you said about, you know, labor power is important. We're talking about the way that our politics work is anti-democratic. Of course, the way that most of our work lives work is anti-democratic. You don't get any votes. Like, the employees don't get any votes on the board, don't get any say in how their jobs and how their lives are operated. Like, they're just expected to go out there and be exploited, right? And so it's anti-democratic all across the board. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people, especially sort of self-righteous fucking lefties, will be like, oh, these fucking hayseeds in the middle of the country, and, you know, they're voting against their own self-interest. And it's like, are they, bro? Maybe they're a lot smarter than you are in recognizing that this shit is a waste of everybody's time. If it doesn't make a difference who's up there, that the corporations have everybody bought and paid for, and no little guy will ever get any recompense for, you know, his blood, sweat, and tears and making this fucking country run, maybe they're the ones that actually get it. And their apathy and their willingness to not participate in the farce that we call our political system is actually the right way to go. Not to say that I agree with that argument, but I think the argument can easily be made. Okay. Yeah. This idea.
At least those people are making the people you hate mad, you know, and like that's the pleasure they get out of it, you know. Like, I mean, that was a huge part of Trump's appeal. I mean, that's what I would always tell people, is like, the only way, like, if you're anti-Trump, right, which I was anti-Trump, right, you know, and still am,
and still
right?
am.
Whatever. Yeah, of course, you know, but like, if you're anti-Trump, you can't get mad. You don't get mad about it, you know, like, if you get mad about it, you're just feeding his power, right? Because most people understand he's not gonna like deliver anything. I think most people have realized that politics doesn't deliver anything. When's the last time politics has delivered anything, you know? And what it is now is like it's a contest over who gets more mad, you know? Like when Joe Biden is in power, you're seeing like these like right wingers go apoplectic calling him a socialist, and like they get mad at AOC, they call her like a, you know, Alexandria occasional cortex, you know, whatever. And, you know, like, that's what politics is now. It's like, okay, well, it's kind of fun that your like enemies get so mad all the time. And then when Trump is in power, the libs are the ones who get really mad all the time. And, you know, the people in the middle of the country hate like snooty libs. So it's fun for them to get to see them get mad. And that's all that politics is. So like, if you are against any of these things, like the last thing you can do is get mad about it. All you got to do is either ignore them or laugh about it, which is what we do. We laugh about it. But it's just that's essentially what politics has become. It's a game over who's going to get more mad about what the fuck's going on.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, look, if you're one of our listeners and you think January 6th is like this serious thing, like, I'm not going to ridicule you for being deeply troubled by January 6th. That's not what I'm saying. I just think it's the way the media frames it is this idea that it's an existential threat to American democracy, which I think we can quibble over whether that's true or not. But again, if that's the case, if democracy is what we care about and the will of the people being exercised, then, man, we got a lot of shit that we can make front page news every freaking day. You know, yeah. Just the idea that these cats own, they can personally own stock in corporations. I mean, like, yeah. How is that the will of the people being exercised there? This is, you can just go up and down the list of shit that actually matters. And, you know, a lot of times I feel like people will say to us like, oh, well, you're letting the Republicans off the hook because they're not doing for anybody either. And look, you know, Mitch McConnell, when he thought this thing was going to pass, started bragging about what it would do for Kentuckians. Like this bill that he wasn't going to vote for, and he was going to make sure that no Republicans voted for. He was bragging about it, about what it would do for his constituents, these great things. Like, yeah, it's absurd the way the Republican Party handles governing. Like, we know that. But, like, you know, the people who claim to be the ones who are going to walk the walk and talk the talk, and they're saving us from Republican rule and oblivion, for them to just sputter and look this utterly ridiculous, you know, is disheartening.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, again, it's all kabuki theater. The media and the political class loves a good anything that allows them to, do more kabuki, to pretend that something's happening when really like nothing's happening, or the important things that happen just happened quietly in the background. You know, whether it was Trump's impeachment or whether it's January 6th or whatever. You know, like think about like. Trump got impeached twice, you know, like, and think about like how much coverage that got, and the Russia gate and whatever, you know, like there's always something that is meant to be, you know, the most important political thing in the world when it has actually very little political import, and the actual things that are important just happen quietly in the background and no one notices and no one cares. And yeah, that's the sad state of our politics right now.
And man, from stupid news to slightly more stupider, but just overall, just ridiculous. Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos, you guys have all seen the HBO doc. You've read countless profiles. You've read countless like accounts of the rise and fall of this fraudulent company. Of course, she claimed to invent a machine that would just prick your finger and do 50 million blood tests at once, thereby, you know, basically streamlining American health as far as it, you know, your blood work is concerned. And it was supposed to be revolutionary. Of course, every single medical expert that ever looked anywhere near this thing was like, that's dumb. That's not really how blood tests work. Like, it was just a fraud from the start. But this woman was able to raise billions of bucks, hundreds of millions of dollars in investment from Silicon Valley for a farce. She got a bunch of prominent people on her board, and like this shit was just all bullshit. And I think why me and Nando wanted to talk about this, it's indicative of a couple of things. One, you know, obviously I think by now we're past the point of thinking Silicon Valley culture is anything other than a fucking joke. That these people are just complete dorks with their heads up their asses, lack any self-awareness or emotional intelligence. And, you know, they're all just shining their own, you know, asses or whatever. That's one. And two, just the amount of wealth that's concentrated in that area of the country and in that sector that these people can throw billions of just light billions of dollars on fire and it not matter to anyone. It's not like, you know, remember when the AMC and GameStop thing happened, and you know, all of these people conspire on Reddit to take down this hedge fund or whatever, and it's like, oh shit, they made a terrible investment, or they made something that they thought was a sound investment, now it's tanking that company. They need to be rescued. It's like awful, right? And like this company almost died from it, from this horrible investment. Silicon Valley can just burn money on WeWork and burn money on Theranos, and it doesn't fucking matter at all. Like, venture capitalists and these hedge funds, like, they can burn as much money as they want on count, like, which, and again, like, the Theranos thing is so instructive because this shit never made any sense. Nobody vetted it, and they were able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars behind a fraudulent idea. And again, the worst part is, like, nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. That's how wealthy these people are.
Yeah. No, and I think, like, if we're trying to get, like, analytical about it, I mean, it's super, it's fun to watch, you know, this all happen. It's completely alien to our lives, you know, like, I mean, like, it's, people only get held accountable in America if they fuck over other rich people. I mean, that's why Martin Shkreli was in prison. That's why Elizabeth Holmes is going to prison. It's like, when the victims are poor people, it doesn't matter. If the victims, quote unquote, are other rich people, then it does matter. Like, I think it's instructive that Elizabeth Holmes was found guilty of defrauding investors, but she was found innocent in defrauding patients, which is just it just shows you how the justice system works. Mm-hmm. But I think what it tells, with the broader thing with Silicon Valley that you can see in the last few years, is that there are a handful of companies that are insanely powerful and wealthy. Right. You know, like, I think Apple just became this week the first $3 trillion company in history of capitalism. Good for them. Congratulations, Apple. Facebook and Google are not far behind. And, you know, that there's these kind of giant monsters at Silicon Valley. And a lot of people in Silicon Valley, as a result of all that, are very, very wealthy. Thing is, everyone's looking for the next one of those things, you know, like, everyone's looking to get in on the next unicorn, as they call it. Right. And there are no more. There are no more, because essentially those small that small number of companies have conquered the internet.
Yeah,
they exactly. They own everything. And there are no new productive outlets. There is nowhere for this money to go anymore. I mean, Apple famously has more cash on hand than, like, you know, like, it's insane how much cash on hand they have. It's because they have no productive investments to put it in. And so if Apple's making that decision, you can imagine what investors have to do. They have to try to figure out value where there is no new productive place to put it, which is why you're seeing this whole fucking crypto nonsense. Which is why you're seeing this whole NFT thing, you know, it's because they gotta put it somewhere. They have to create something
to spend it on. Like, they literally have to find ways to waste their money. They're that obscenely rich, which, you know, again, speaks to all of the themes that we talk about on this show all the time, which is just like, I don't know how you justify the existence of these people's wealth, right? Like, it's not doing anything to benefit anybody. And as a matter of fact, they're not even hoarding it. Like, at least you could be like, all right, they're hoarding it and saving it for future generations or whatever. Like, oh, my ancestors are gonna. It's just like, bro, there's no way for me to hoard all of this. I have to unload some of it. Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, it just kind of speaks to the obscenity of some of the wealth in this country, right? And meanwhile, you know, our Congress can't pass a child tax credit because Joe Manchin thinks that crackheads are going to be using the money on crack.
Right.
$300 a child per month on crack.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's crazy.
Bro, like, just think about that for a second, right? Just think about that. Like, let's just say that's true. We don't even know. Like, let's just say 5% of the population of people that are going to be using it are, you know, crackheads who are going to use it for.
It's way too high anyway. It's like 0.0005.
It's way less than that. Yeah. Let's just say it was 5. Let's just say 5% of this shit was wasteful. And 95% of the people that are using it to support their family, to, you know, be able to go out and stimulate the economy in other ways and all of that shit. it more than justifies itself, like, period. And of course, obviously, the percentage is way less than 5%, but like, it would, this program would more than justify itself. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, like, we have politicians who feel comfortable going out and being like, crackheads are gonna buy crack,
yeah,
with $300 per child a month, not a week, a month, $300 per kid a month. And these homies get to, you know, waste their money on shit like Theranos, where this chick is doing Steve Jobs cosplay and she talking about saving humanity. Like, I mean, it's like, anybody could look at this and be like, this is dumb. What are we talking about? Like, even Apple, the most successful tech company in the history of tech, didn't save the world. They made nice phones and, you know, I'm talking to you from a dope Apple laptop, but they didn't save the world. The greatest tech company of all time just made a cool gadget. I think it's absurd.
Yeah. No, it's just, there's so many things about it that are just infuriating. For example, Adam Neumann, the founder of WeWork, I just saw, there's a big article in the Wall Street Journal that he's planning his next act, and it has something to do with apartments. You know, that'll be a fun article to read. It's saved in my tabs. But also, there was an article, like a Washington Post article, just like gushing over Bill Gates's generosity in the pandemic, because him and Melinda Gates gave them like $20 billion, like something, like whatever it was. I don't even remember how much money it was. $5 billion, whatever it was, doesn't really matter. Bill Gates is richer today than at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, like, how generous could is that really? You know, if you have an endless well and you're just giving out a few drops, never really threatening your actual kind of wealth in any meaningful way, then are you really generous? Like, it's generous for me or you to give $50, you know, because that actually like reduces our net worth in a significant way. You know, like, we have to make decisions over those $50. Bill Gates, like, $5 billion, like, it doesn't even begin to compute. He is richer today. Like, I remember when the whole giving pledge became a vogue thing amongst billionaires, where Bill Gates started it, Warren Buffett signed on, and they like claimed that they were going to give away 50% of their wealth before they died or whatever. 50%. Wow, sounds like a lot. Half their wealth. All those people are like, Bill Gates is richer today than the day he signed the giving pledge.
Right.
Like, so like, what do you, like, it's like, he's not half as rich.
Half of that has now grown exponentially. Like, it's like Monopoly money, damn near. Yeah. And again, you know, this shit is right in front of people's faces. Like, you know, I don't think we're at the point where rich people gonna be dragged through the streets. I don't know that we'll ever be at that point. But, you know, again, like, I don't know how aware people are that, like, Jamie Dimon is just like, yeah, I'm taking a meeting with Mitch McConnell. That's my boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I don't understand is people who, like, love Elon Musk, you know? Like, there's regular people who, like, are Elon Musk fans, you know? Like, and I'm like, what do you, like...
That's another Silicon Valley scam, by the way.
Yeah. But, like, just... So much about it is just it's just absolutely kind of crazy. I mean, the amount of money that these people have and that is sloshing around the system that is not available to you and I. I mean, I mentioned the crypto thing. That's like a whole fucking, you know, obvious kind of just speculative bubble because these people don't know what to do with it. But just so much of our economy has become that. I mean, I think it's interesting, you know, the famous French economist, Thomas Piketty. I mean, this might be a little too heady for this show, but Thomas Piketty, the famous French economist who wrote a book called Capital in the 21st Century, which became like a big bestseller because he basically argued the point mathematically that under capitalism, it is inevitable that wealth concentrates at the top because the rate of growth of capital always exceeds the general rate of growth of the economy. So meaning, like, if you have money, it grows, right? Like, if you have a bunch of money in the bank, you know, that money grows, there's interest. Yeah. And that rate of growth, that number, whatever it is always higher than the overall rate of growth of the economy. So like when the economy grows, like, you and I get more money under normal circumstances, but the rate of capital growth is always greater. So eventually, you know, that crowds out the rest of it, and it becomes and we get to the situation where we have today, which is the same situation that we had at the end of the 1900s. It was only interrupted by these cataclysmic world wars. But were it not for the world wars, that's just the reality under capitalism. Is there's like four rich people, they have everything, and everyone else is me and you, you know. And I found it interesting that this year Piketty actually for the first time came out and called himself a socialist, which you know, wow, is the only logical conclusion that one can have when looking at the way capitalism works. Like, if you kind of understand how capitalism works, you can succeed within it, you know. Like, you and I, Waz, are relative winners in the game of capitalism.
Oh,
we're,
yeah.
We're doing fine.
I'm winning, yeah, baby.
You're winning, baby.
I got an empty-ass one-bedroom apartment. Yeah. Every now and again, I get to get laid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's great.
You know, you have a relatively comfortable job. You know, like, you're not like fucking, you know, a day laborer in the fields of Guatemala, which is also, you know, those are the losers of capitalism, right? But the reality is that if you kind of understand how it works, you can still succeed within it. You know, it doesn't mean that it's like the correct or moral or whatever best system in the universe. That it has these kind of inherent flaws that, like, no matter how much, you know, kind of you try to change it through politics, the reality is that over time, wealth concentrates at the top, and then eventually those people at the top will corrupt the political system, any political system. There's just too much money. And even if we pass campaign finance reform, like, whatever policy, like individual policy, the reality of their wealth just gives them power. I mean, because wealth equals power in always and forever. So, yeah, I mean, good for Elizabeth.
Always with the great news here at Vogue Pros, man. Of course, inevitably, Nando passes along an article where somebody says it's basically not woke to send Elizabeth Holmes to prison because of the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, I thought you believed in ending mass incarceration. Did you want to put Elizabeth Holmes in prison?
No idea what that even fucking means. I'm pretty sure she's going to end up in jail because she defrauded rich people. And when you do that, you have to pay. The elites don't abide by that. You cheat out the elites, they're going to get your ass. Whether that be insurance companies, you ever do insurance fraud? Insurance companies like, no. We got to get their ass. You know what I mean? Like, you can't defraud the elites. And she did that. So she'll probably do a little bit of time in the pokey. She'll probably come out like Martha Stewart. You know what I mean? Doing good, doing well for herself. So shouts to Elizabeth Holmes. You did it. You got away with it. You probably go to a country club prison and not federal fuck me in the ass prison, as was once said on Office Space. But yeah, that's our show for today. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Peace.